Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. In my previous podcast, I pondered the role emotional contagion plays in the quality of the bonds between humans and companion animals, and particularly those we form with dogs. Later, while doing yard work, I began to think about emotional contagion in social learning. Were these two forms of communication related? If so, how? And where does domestication fit in? Let me pause here for something to add to your don't knock it till you've tried it file. I do a lot of my best thinking while performing familiar to the point of mindless physical tasks, like mowing, weeding, stacking wood, shoveling snow, or doing laundry or house cleaning. Most of us have routine chores that fall into this category. When I was younger, I used to bemoan the waste of my valuable time doing these dull, boring jobs. I always had what I considered more important things to do. But then one day I began my weekly mowing marathon filled with thoughts of a tough problem I needed to work through sooner than later. I found those thoughts so engrossing that I forgot all about my usual woe is me rant. Not only did the time pass more quickly, I had a mown lawn and a clearer view of a difficult issue when I finished. Once I made this perceptual adjustment, I started deliberately saving complex subjects to contemplate during otherwise boring times. So if you're not already doing it, don't knock it till you've tried it. My yard work ruminations about any relationship between emotional contagion and social learning convinced me that such a connection must exist because their supporting physiology is so interconnected. For example, from day one, mammalian mothers communicate with their offspring when nursing. But how and what they communicate may vary. One way moms of multiple mammalian species communicate comforting and other messages to their nursing young is via scents, pheromones, produced in areolar glands in the area around their nipples. Breast milk composition also can influence the behavior of nursing youngsters. Studies indicate that breast milk from anxious moms contains more cortisol, a primary stress hormone. Babies receiving more cortisol in their milk gain weight faster. This seems like a good thing, but these babies also are more anxious and less confident. In this case, the mother's milk becomes the means by which emotions, as well as nutrition, are transferred from mother to young. Initially, the idea that a youngster drinking mother's milk laced with stress hormones would drink more seems backwards. Isn't that a bad thing? Shouldn't they want less of that stuff? If you think about it in survival terms, though, a different picture emerges. Unlike milk from a more relaxed mother, that of a stressed mom could dry up at any time. If mom lives in a harsh environment with a feast or famine food supply, then it would be to the baby's advantage to get as much of her milk as they can whenever they could. On the other hand, if the mom communicated her anxiety to her young in a stable environment where food was plentiful, such as in the average companion animal household, that cortisol-spiked milk could undermine her offspring's survival if they drank a lot of it every day. In that case, we'd wind up with overweight, anxious youngsters and their moms emotionally feeding off each other and undermining each other's health. In that energy-efficient way nature works, social learning also addresses a range of offspring needs. Just as emotional contagion readily shares relaxed and anxious emotions between parent and offspring, relaxed and anxious parents want to teach their young behaviors that will protect them and ensure their success as quickly and as efficiently as possible. As researchers Bennett Galef and Kevin Leyland wrote in their article on social learning in animals, quote, many species have evolved a capacity to use information provided by others to guide their learning. Experienced others, such as parents, provide a reservoir of potentially useful behaviors. Adopting behaviors directly from this reservoir allows naive individuals to shortcut the many iterations of trial and error necessary for individual learning and to move directly to solutions previously tested by others, unquote. These comments reflect the results of the author's review of the scientific literature devoted to social learning in animals. Their findings also reveal that nature takes the process of social learning one step farther. It doesn't just occur between offspring and parents. It also occurs between less experienced animals and those perceived as more experienced. As animal parents care for their offspring, younger adults in the social group pay attention to how those parents go about it. This form of social learning also plays a critical survival role. In wolves and wild dogs, a day will come when parents will leave their pups in the care of these less experienced others. Once again, if what parents and those perceived as more experienced teach the young and subordinates enables the latter to succeed, all is well. But if the behaviors learned from those perceived as more experienced turns out to be maladaptive, then teacher and students alike will suffer. One example of this is how the social learning that primes puppies to survive in a free-roaming environment can create problems for them if they wind up in companion dog households in suburbia. Rounding out the necessary scientific trinity to make the transition between the emotional contagion social learning link and what goes on between humans and domestic animals, we had the domestication studies. The physiological and behavioral culture of domestication enables members of one species to perceive those of another as members of their own. That doesn't mean that we and our dogs and cats perceive each other as exactly alike, but it does explain why it's easier for a domestic animal to accept human presence and handling than a wild one. And it also explains why domestic animals, including us, are better at picking up emotions and copying behaviors from each other. How well this works once again depends on context. Just because a change is associated with domestication may make it easier for humans and domestic animals to share emotions and learn from each other doesn't guarantee that the results will be good. Over the years, approximately 80% of the pet owners surveyed consistently said they considered their pets members of their family. However, just as in human families, those in positions of authority in human companion animal families may communicate any of a full range of emotions and behaviors to their animals. In the best situations, the emotional and learning package we communicate to our pets results in emotionally, behaviorally, and physically healthy animals. At its worst, it undermines our animals' well-being. But once we recognize that the system exists, we can strive to communicate the best emotions and behaviors. We may not always succeed, but recognizing when we don't will enable us to develop the necessary skills to help our animals and to ensure a mutually beneficial bond with them. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.